Pleasure to see each of you again tonight. I hope that what David and I have to present to you tonight will benefit each and every one of you. Tonight we're going to be continuing our series on Hebrews. We'll be studying the first 11 verses of Hebrews chapter 4. Let's begin by reading Hebrews chapter 4, 1 through 11. It says, "Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. For we which have believed do enter into rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached enter not in because of unbelief. Again, he limiteth a certain day, saying in David, Today, after so long a time, as it is said, Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. For if Jesus had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. For he that is entered into this rest, he also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor therefore to enter into rest, that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." In verse 1 of this chapter, Paul talks about fear and fearing God. Verse 1 says, "Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it." Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 14 shows us that it is appropriate to fear God. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 14 says, "Happy is the man that feareth alway, but he that hardeneth his heart shall fall into mischief." This verse shows us that it is proper to fear God. This isn't the same kind of fear that we have on this earth that is usually accompanied by a dislike. Instead, this is a healthy respect for God's power and his strength. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28 tells us about God's power, showing us why we should fear and respect him. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28 says, "And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." This shows us why we should fear God. He is a great and powerful being who has the power to destroy all of his enemies. If we are among God's enemies, he will use his great and terrible power to destroy our body and our soul. This is why we should fear God. If we are his enemies, we should dread him. But if we serve him, we should have a respect for his power to destroy or to save us. Then in Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 2, Paul talks about faith, and he says that the word must be mixed with our faith. Hebrews 4 and verse 2 says, "For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it." In Genesis chapter 22, verse 18, we find the Abrahamic promise, which gave a promise of land and a promise of a blessing through the seed of Abraham. Genesis 22, verse 18 says, "And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." God tells Abraham in this passage that all people throughout the world would be blessed through his seed. This descendant of Abraham would be Jesus, the man who gave the greatest blessing of all, salvation, to all the people on the earth. in Acts chapter 3, verses 25 through 26, we find the fulfillment of this prophecy about the Messiah that we just read. Acts chapter 3, verses 25 through 26 says, "Ye are the children of the prophets, and of the covenant which God made with our fathers, saying unto Abraham, And in thy seed shall all the kindreds of the earth be blessed. Unto you first, God, having raised up his Son Jesus, sent him to bless you, in turning away every one of you from his iniquities." This confirms that the seed promise points to Christ. Peter quotes God's promise to Abraham and continues to show how it was fulfilled. Peter explained how God sent his Son to bless us. God sent Jesus, a descendant of Abraham, to us, and Jesus blessed us by giving us salvation. In Abraham's seed, all nations of the earth have indeed been truly blessed. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 8 shows us that in the Abrahamic promise, the gospel was preached to Abraham. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 8 says, "And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the heathen through faith, preached before the gospel unto Abraham, saying, In thee shall all nations be blessed." The seed promise to Abraham was a declaration of the gospel. It was a messianic prophecy telling the good news of the Messiah's future coming. Acts chapter 13, verses 32 through 33, shows us that Christ fulfilled God's promise to Abraham. Acts chapter 13, verses 32 through 33 says, "And we declare unto you glad tidings, how that the promise which was made unto the fathers, God hath fulfilled the same unto us, their children, in that he hath raised up Jesus again, as it is also written in the second psalm, Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee." Christ's ministry fulfilled the promise made unto the fathers. The fathers were the patriarchs, men just like Abraham. God made this promise to Abraham that all people would be blessed through Abraham's seed. And Christ fulfilled this promise by being begotten from the grave, raised from the dead, so that all nations of the earth could be blessed with salvation. In Hebrews 4, verses 3 through 4, Paul talks about a coming rest. Hebrews 4, 3 through 4 says, "For we which have believed do enter into his rest, as he said, As I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, And God did rest the seventh day from all his works." Revelation chapter 14 and verse 13 shows us that all of God's true followers will rest after their lives here on this earth. Revelation chapter 14 verse 13 says, "And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, Write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them." Those that die in God's favor will, after this life on earth, rest from all of their labors. All of God's saints, his true followers, will be given rest. Then in Hebrews 4, verses 5 through 7, Paul talks about David's psalm about a coming rest for Israel. Hebrews chapter 4, verses 5 through 7 says, "And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. Again, he limiteth a certain day, saying in David, Today, after so long a time, as it is said, Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts." In Psalm 95, verses 7 through 8, David showed the Israelites that there was a coming rest for them. Psalms chapter 95, verses 7 through 8 says, "For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, and the sheep of his hand. Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your heart, as in the provocation, and as in the day of temptation in the wilderness." In David's time, the Israelites had already been provided with the Sabbath rest, and they had already found rest in Canaan. Both of these forms of rest had already come, but David showed, using the word today, that in their day, there was still another rest coming. This rest was going to be a rest from all trouble. In Hebrews chapter 4, verses 8 through 11, Paul talks about a spiritual promise to us. Hebrews chapter 4, verses 8 through 11 says, "For if Jesus had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God, for he that is entered into his rest, he also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." In Luke chapter 16, verse 25, we see the story of the rich man and Lazarus, where Lazarus was relieved from all of his earthly struggles. Luke chapter 16, verse 25 says, "But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented." Lazarus had a miserable, painful life here on the earth. But after he died, he received rest. He rested from trouble and pain and was in perfect peace. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 5 shows us that the faithful will receive rest in heaven after this life. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 5 says, "For the hope which is laid up for you in heaven, whereof ye heard before in the world of the truth of the gospel." There is a prepared rest promised for us that is laid up in heaven. After our lives, if we have been faithful to God, we will rest in heaven. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 4 shows us that this heavenly rest is incorruptible. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 4 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you." This is the additional rest that David spoke of in Psalm 95. This final rest will be eternal, incorruptible, and perfect. If we are faithful Christians, this is what we have to look forward to. Heaven will be a place of eternal rest, a place of everlasting joy. This uncorruptible rest is prepared for us if we only choose to take it. These key elements of Hebrews chapter 4, 1 through 11, set the stage for David to continue our study, adding a little bit more depth and tying it all together and concluding our study tonight. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Cameron. Bearing in mind the big picture theme of Hebrews, that Paul writes this general epistle to people that were drifting back to following Moses and to following Jewish traditions, and in doing that, they were drifting away from Christ. And so, having made a lot of points to show that Christ was superior to that Mosaic system, that he's superior to Moses and all those things that we've talked about in past studies, it makes sense that he would open this fourth chapter with, "Let us therefore fear." Because Christ is mighty, because he's divine, because he's God's son, we've got to fear the idea of turning against him and therefore losing the promised rest that Cameron talked to us about. And so that's the opening of this chapter then, as an admonition to fear the Lord. And he goes on and develops the idea of failing to enter into our promised rest. He talks about there in verse 2 that unto us the gospel was preached as well as unto them. But when the word was preached to them, it didn't profit them. They didn't put their faith in it. They didn't believe and trust. Well, you might ask, when was the gospel preached to Israel? And Cameron's comments answered that question for us. When God gave the Abrahamic promise, that was a declaration of the coming of Christ. And in that sense, that was the gospel. So, what does that have to do with entering into the promised land? Part of the Abrahamic promise was the promise that they would inherit the land of Canaan, the promised land. And so that Abrahamic promise was a package deal, that it included the promise of the coming of Christ, that Israel would be a great nation, and that they would inherit the land of Canaan. And so when they doubted God's keeping of the promise to inherit the land of Canaan, when they came up from Kadesh Barnea in Numbers chapter 13 and spied out the land and came back and said, we can't overthrow it, the inhabitants are too strong, they were doubting God keeping that part of the Abrahamic promise. And when you doubt that part, you're doubting the full scope of that promise, which included the promise of Christ. So in that sense, they were rejecting the gospel. And it's ironic that the audience of the Hebrew letter would think themselves to be faithful to Abraham by turning back and following the Mosaic system. But in reality, they were betraying Abraham. Because in turning back to Moses, they were turning away from Christ, who had been promised in that Abrahamic system all along. And so Paul admonished them, you need to be afraid. Because you think you're doing the right thing, but you're doing the same thing those people did when they doubted God's promise back then. Only here in this day of Hebrews chapter 4 being written, they were doubting another aspect of that Abrahamic promise. And because of that, they stood the threat of losing their opportunity to enter into heaven. Now let's read verse 3 and verse 4. For we who have believed do enter into the rest, as he said, so I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. He's going back and forth between Psalms 95 and the creation story. What happened in the creation story? God labored in creating the world, the universe, and life, and all these things. And then on the seventh day, he ceased from his labors. All right, now what happened with Israel? They labored as slaves in the land of Egypt, and when they were permitted escape from all that, they were able to rest from those labors, and they were promised that they could enter the land of Canaan. So you've got a comparison between God resting from his labors and creating the world, and then Israel being able to rest from their labors, which compares to the faithful follower of Christ today being able to rest from our labors at the end of this life. But what's the snag? The snag is like what he talked about in Psalms chapter 95, which Paul cites pieces of here in Hebrews chapter 4, and he also cited it in our earlier studies. And that is David talking to Israel in his generation saying, you guys are going to blow it if you're not careful. You've got to be faithful to the Lord. And when David talked to them in that way about entering the rest, think about it. They had already entered the promised land. They had already been practicing the Sabbath for multiple generations. When he talked about entering a rest, he was talking about something else. And Paul is explaining, he's talking about heaven. And so the stakes were high. It's not just a matter of missing out on getting to live in this certain area of land. It's a matter of missing out on a heavenly home if you don't hold in true faith to following the Lord. There are Sabbatarians who read this passage, that is, people who say we're supposed to keep the Sabbath, and they try to twist this into an instruction that we're supposed to keep the Sabbath. And when you study all this in its context and take it back to Psalms 95, which is being quoted, it becomes very obvious that the Sabbath keeping is the last thing on the Lord's mind. In fact, it's the opposite of that. He's saying you've got to give up all those Mosaic things and cling to the Christian system if you expect to be saved. And the introduction of the Sabbath there, or the discussion of God resting on the seventh day, is just a comparison to our heavenly rest. Now we continue on in verse 5 through 7. And again, in this place they shall not enter my rest. That's citing Psalms 95. Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience. Again, he designates a certain day, saying in David, today, after such a long time, it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterwards have spoken of another day. Now, in verse 8, I read from the New King James there. You might have noticed that it says Joshua. And you might, if you've got a King James, you might say, well, mine says Jesus. Jesus is just the Greek for the Hebrew name Joshua. Our Savior's name is the same name as Joshua, who followed after Moses historically and led Israel into the promised land. Same name. And so it wasn't Jesus, the son of Mary, that led Israel into the promised land. It was Joshua of the Old Testament. And that's who he's talking about in verse 8. So the Hebrew writer is arguing, since David, after Israel had been in the promised land, for when did they enter in? 1500 B.C.? And when did David rule? 1000 B.C.? He's saying after so much time passed, after they'd been in the promised land for 500 years, he still talks about entering the rest. Therefore, it's got to be something besides the promised land that he had in mind. Now, here's where this carries weight with the audience that to which this letter was written. They're saying they believe in the Old Testament and in following Moses and the prophets of old. David was one of those prophets. And the Hebrew writer is using one of the prophets of the Old Testament to say there's something better than those old physical promises. There's a new and better system. And of course, that new and better system is Jesus Christ, our spiritual promise. And that takes us to verse 9. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. And you stop and think about that when you think about heaven. Remember what I told you about the mention of the Sabbath? That's just a comparison back to God labored in creating the world and then he stopped from his labors. So when you and I serve Christ faithfully in this life, what happens at the end of this life? We stop working. We don't have to work anymore. Our work is finished. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to this, the same example of disobedience. When those people doubted God, he looked at that doubt. He looked at that lack of faith and said, it's disobedience. He said, don't be like that. Don't give up. Now, how that pertains to the audience here, of course, relates to their wavering and waffling in wanting to go back to Jewish traditions. Well, you don't have that itch, do you? You're not sitting here thinking, you know, I wonder if I ought to go back and follow Moses' law. We're not having that problem. But we do have problems. And those problems that we have might just as well pull us away from Christ as their problems were pulling them away from Christ. So what's the message for us? Now, this shows where the Bible becomes an extraordinarily practical book. My problem may not be exactly like the people that I'm reading about on this page right here, but there's enough similarity between the two that I can take what fixed their problem and know that it'll fix mine. And it's the same fix. Putting your trust in the promises of God that he'll do what he said he would do, and faithfully serving him in accordance with that trust. The people of Israel that trusted God, what did they do? They crossed that river and went to war. with the Canaanites and drove them out of the land. The people the day that trust God, what do? You'll go to war against Satan and you'll stand for the Lord and live a life for Christ. That's what it means to trust God, to faithfully serve Him. I hope these comments are an encouragement to you. I hope they drive us all to want to be more faithful servants of God. With that, we bring our study to a close and that happy admonition to remain faithful to God. If you've not done so in your life, if you've not remained faithful to God, we would love to assist you with our prayers. If you've never even become a Christian, to be faithful to God in the first place, we'd love to assist you in becoming a Christian. If we can help in either way, please come, have a seat on the front while we stand and while we sing.